You can listen to Heart of the Matter here on Dundalk FM 100 each Monday evening at 7 o'clock.
Heart of the Matter is brought to you by Dundalk Christian Counselling Centre. This free counselling service is situated at Dundalk Baptist Centre on RTE Terrace. You can contact us in complete confidence on 932 7094 or email us at christiancounselling@aircom.net. You can also visit our website at dundalkbaptistchurch.org/counselling.
This service is part funded by TUSLA, the Child and Family Agency.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Heart of the Matter on Dundalk FM, your community, your radio. We are back live in the studio again this evening. It's fantastic to be back on the air with you after a 3-week absence, I think it is. I was out for a couple of weeks and then we had a visit from Storm Ophelia, ex-Hurricane Ophelia last week. So we had to be off the air for that as well. But I have in studio with me Michael Amati. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing well, but we're still down one.
Yeah,
we're not in full force.
Not back to full strength yet. You know, we're like playing with half a team at the moment. But anyway, we will be back to full strength, Lord willing, next week. But
Next week is a
next week's a bank
big holiday.
Of course, so we're back to another recorded show. So
it'll be like 3 months from now.
No, hopefully then after the bank holiday, we have a recorded show for the bank holiday, which is a very special show as well. We have a special guest interviewer on that one. That would be a recorded show, but well worth listening to. Mm. And we also have, so that's next week, and of course, hopefully the following week, then we will be back to full strength, back with Stephen in studio. He's away this evening as well. But Michael, we're going to take a little time out this evening, and we're going to look at a topic that you've been looking at in the Sunday morning sermons.
Yeah, so just from what we talked about last week and the week before, since it was a repeat, just on biblical womanhood, we thought we'd just take a little bit of time and look at the other side and ask the question, well, what does the Bible have to say to men? What does biblical manhood look like?
Yeah, so a very interesting idea on that, and something quite radical in our times, I think. It's just like biblical womanhood is quite radical, so biblical manhood is also a very radical concept. But we have our show this evening, and we are beginning with a piece of music. It's an instrumental this evening by Dino, but it's a very well-known hymn written in the late 19th century, I believe, when the father of and was received a telegram of a ship that was lost at sea in the Atlantic, and he was in Scotland, and he received this telegram which said, "Lost with all souls." And so he lost his wife and two daughters in that tragedy. But even in the midst of such sorrow and pain and anguish, he penned one of the most beautiful hymns of all time, which is, "It Is Well With My Soul."
Thank you.
Well, what does it mean to be a biblical man? One of the most helpful things for me that I read with respect to this before Ashley and I got married was Tom Askell's chapter in a book called Dear Timothy, wherein he basically asked the question, what in order has God called you to be? And this is a very good question because it forces us to evaluate our lives based on identity priorities. So in priority order, who are you? Well, the answer that he gave, and I think it's a biblical answer, is first, you are a Christian. Second, you are a husband. Third, a father. And then fourth is your occupation. So as a man, you're not primarily identified by what you do, but rather who you are united to. You are united to Christ. Now, I'm convinced that there is not a situation where this priority list does not hold. Now, how one keeps this list within the context of their family life is going to be different. But first and foremost, I am a Christian. I am a follower of the Lord Jesus before anything else. Only after my God am I a husband. My wife ought always to be number two in my life in that sense. She takes priority over the children. And so thirdly, I am a father to my children. Only at the end comes the job, whatever occupation I have. And if any of those gets moved around, chaos then really ensues in your life. To put your wife in the number one spot is really to dethrone God and put her in his place. And it's a position that she can't do anything but fail. And if your job comes before your wife and your kids, you may succeed in your job, but you'll lose your family in doing so. So what I want to look at, just to kind of get us thinking about biblical manhood, is actually a passage from the Old Testament in 1 Kings chapter 2. 1 Kings chapter 2, the first 9 verses. And this is what we read. As David's time to die drew near, he charged Solomon his son, saying, I am going the way of all the earth, so be strong and become a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, and his testimonies, according to what is written in the law of Moses, that you may succeed in all that you do, and wherever you turn, so that the Lord may carry out his promise, which he spoke concerning me, saying, If your sons are careful of their way to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne. Now, you also know what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner, the son of Ner, and to Amasa, the son of Jether, whom he killed. He also shed the blood of war in peace. And he put the blood of war on his belt, about his waist, and on his sandals, on his feet. So act according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to Sheol in peace. But show kindness to the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table. For they assisted me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. Behold, there is with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjaminite of Bahurim. Now it was he who cursed me with a violent curse on the day I went to Mahanaim. But when he came down to me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now therefore, do not let him go unpunished, for you are a wise man, and you will know what you ought to do to him, and you will bring his gray hair down to Sheol with blood. And so here are the final words of a father to his son. And what does David, the man after God's own heart, tell his son? Well, in verses 1 to 4, David tells Solomon, be strong and become a man. Do what men do and be a man. And so the final lesson from father to son is this, be a man. Now, this isn't a pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of pep talk that he's given here. No, he's telling Solomon, you need to be a man, right? And he's not telling him in the context of, okay, Solomon, why don't you go to the store and get some tools, you know, make some grunts, get tough, push people around, right? That's not what he means by being a man. Rather, David is telling Solomon that this is part of your walk with God. This is what you are going to do as a man. And what is the first thing he says to Solomon? Keep the charge of the Lord your God. And so there's a particular characteristic in biblical manliness that is to love God with all his heart, soul, mind, strength, and have a desire to follow him in all things. Well, we'll talk briefly a little bit more when we come back after our next song, which is a song called Shoulders by For King and Country.
I look up to the mountains. Does my strength come from the mountains? No. My strength comes from God, who made heaven and earth and the mountains.
We saw David is speaking to his son Solomon as he is preparing to die. And what does he tell him? But that he must be a man who follows after God. And so a man cannot be a biblical man. He cannot exemplify those characteristics indicative of biblical manhood unless he believes in the one and only God of the Bible. The man who does not believe in this God is, as Proverbs says, a fool and will not be what a man ought to be. Notice the words of Solomon in Proverbs 1:1-8, specifically at the very end, where he says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." And so, men, do not think that you can lead your family or household, or that you can even be the man God has called you to be by the use of your own intellectual powers. Right? Wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord. Now, just men in general, they may be good husbands, a nice man, but he can never be the kind of man God demands of him because he does not fear the Lord. Therefore, be strong and show yourself a man by fearing the Lord. That is what God has called us to do, keeping his commandments, loving him with all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength. When we come back to 1 Kings 2, we see that David is also telling Solomon, look, God has already spoken. He's already told you how to live as a king. So obey his statutes and ordinances that were left in the law of Moses, and you will succeed. And we read these in Deuteronomy 17, where God, through Moses, left instructions for what the king was to do. And in Deuteronomy 17, we read how the king was to place his trust in him and not go after many wives and not build up giant armies, but that he was to place his trust fully in God. And he says in verse 19 that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by keeping all the words of this law. Again, there's this idea of fearing the Lord. So what do we gather is the characteristics of godly men from these opening verses? Well, a man must not only know what God has said, but he must incline his heart to do it. This is the characteristic of godly men. Love, fear, and obey God. Men who say you love God, you may say you fear him, but how is this evidenced? By action, by external evidence. Faith without works is dead, James says. We must be men who not only love God, but know his word, which means you have to be students. You need to be daily in God's word, reading and thinking and meditating and praying. And so how can you lead your family, let alone your own life, in a way that honors God if his word is not the guiding light of your steps? And what does that mean? Well, it means that just coming to church or taking your family to church on Sunday is not enough. Right? If you were very sick and you had to go to the GP and the doctor gave you medicine and said, take this every day and then come back and see me once a week for the next month, but you decide you don't need to take the medicine every day, you'll take it only on the days you go visit the doctor. Are you ever going to get better? You won't. Men, we need to be men who love God, who cherish God above all else, and who keep the charge to follow after his ways. And so the first thing that David tells his son after be a man is obey God. This obedience, however, is to be carried out in a particular context. Solomon is to obey in a particularly masculine context. He is to obey in the context of providing, leading, and protecting. He is to obey in the context of bringing justice and showing kindness. Can you imagine if instead of here he was talking to Solomon, maybe there was recorded his final words to his daughter? Right? They would probably be very different. Well, the first part might be similar. Obey what God has commanded you to do. But the context in which that obedience would be carried out is going to be drastically different. So look at the context here that Solomon is to carry out his charge to be a man. After David tells him, be strong and be a man, obey God, he gives him the context in which he's supposed to live this out. Solomon is to bring justice on Joab and Shimei, and he's to show hospitality and kindness to the sons of Barzillai. There is mercy and there is justice. Many often lean too far one way or too far the other. The demand for justice is so high that there's no room for mercy, or they lean so much toward mercy that justice is never done. And there is a balancing act between these two. We must be men who show both justice and mercy. So how do we know when to show mercy and when to show justice? Well, Dr. Piper has, I think, three helpful criteria to help us think through this issue. First, know your personality and resist excesses that accord with your bent. That is, if you lean too much towards mercy or too much in justice. Second, the more personal and private the offense, the more mercy to show. The more communal and public the offense, the more justice to require. And third, be sure in either case that your motive is love for the most people involved, including the offender. Well, we'll come back after the ad break and finish up this discussion on biblical manhood from this text in 1 Kings. If you'd like to make a comment or tell anything to us, you can reach us at 087-09-09791, or Kevin has the Facebook page open. You can text him a message. But we will be right back right after this ad break.
Dundalk Baptist Church meets at the Baptist Center on RD Terrace. On Sunday morning, we get together at 11 a.m. for our main worship service.
On Sunday evening, we meet at 6 p.m. for Bible study.
We'd love to see you there. And we would indeed love to see you at Dundalk Baptist Church on RD Terrace here in Dundalk in Ireland. We have people listening to us from all over the world. We have people listening to us in the United States, in Washington. Phil's listening to us up in Washington State, on the in the northwest corner of the United States. Adriana's listening to us in California. There are folk listening to us in Mississippi, in Maine, in Massachusetts, in North and South Carolina, and in Michigan as well. So all over the United States, then coming south of the border into Mexico and Brazil. And also in Puerto Rico, I think, as well. So we have folk listening to us in Africa, in Australia, In Asia, we have folk listening to us in the United Arab Emirates, and we always love to hear from you if you're listening in. And if it is your first time listening in, it would be even better if you could get in contact with us here on the show. You can text us, as Michael said, on +353 87 709 791. Or you can email us at heartofthematter@dundalkfm.com. You can contact us on Facebook on Heart of the Matter on Dundalk FM. Or you can contact the Dundalk Baptist Church Facebook page or the Dundalk Baptist Church website at www.dundalkbaptistchurch.org. Then we have folk listening to us in Asia, in Beijing in China. And then we have folk listening to us in the Ukraine, in Romania, in Hungary, in the United Kingdom. We have Marinas listening to us in North Yorkshire. Imperator and Paulina are listening to us in the West Midlands. Matthew is listening to us in Inverness, and there are folk listening to us all over the United Kingdom as well. In Alconbury, my nieces may be listening in as well, so hopefully you're all enjoying the show. Then we have folk listening to us here in Dundalk. We have Ashley is listening to us in Rockmarshall. Good to have you with us, Ashley. And then we have other folk listening to us on 97.7 FM. We have folk listening to us in Dublin. Lucinda's listening to us in Dublin, in Port Leash, in Limerick, in Cork, in Galway, in Enniskillen, and in Belfast, in Temple Patrick, and also in Lisburn. And there are others listening to us all over the place as well, and we really do enjoy hearing from you, so do get in touch with us here on the show as we continue to look at this very important topic of biblical manhood.
Well, I want you to notice the context in which Solomon has to carry out this call from his father to be a man, and it's to bring justice. He has to go after these people and to bring justice upon them. Now, Solomon could have just told his dad, said, look, Dad, I'm new to this whole kingship thing. You know, maybe that's something I can do in a little bit. Let me get my feet wet first. But he doesn't do that. He goes out immediately, because if you read the rest of the chapter, he takes the initiative to do those things first. And so, you know, we live in a culture of excuses. You know, we can give 100 different reasons why we aren't going to do this thing or that thing. But as we see here in his charge to be a man, he goes out and does the hard things first. He does what he's called to do, and he doesn't leave it for later on. Well, we can spend more time on this, and indeed we're just only scratching the surface of this whole discussion of biblical manhood, but we can't help but to realize and to see in the scripture that manhood is ultimately modeled after Jesus. He was born to an economically poor family under an apparent social scandal. Those who followed him did not fully grasp the entirety of who he was and what he was going to have to do. He was tempted by Satan. He was harassed by the Pharisees, and he had 12 men following him who were dull of hearing and hard of heart, and one of whom was a devil. Yet, despite all the circumstances, as Jesus died, he was able to say, "It is finished." He came to do the will of the Father, and he perfectly finished without complaining. He made no excuses. He did what he had to do. Every day, God gives us opportunities to cultivate godly biblical manhood. David killed a lion and a bear before he faced the giant. He also admitted that this was by God's sovereign grace that this happened. And so we as men, as godly men, must reject passivity. We must cultivate biblical manhood in our lives and reject passivity. Well, how do we do this? Well, let me just give you a few ways in which men can cultivate characteristics of biblical masculinity in their lives. Now, this is not all inclusive. This is just to get us thinking. First, do the hardest thing first. When you wake up, attack the hardest thing first. We do all the easy things first, and by the time it's later on in the day, we don't have the strength to do those hard things. Men who continually push off the harder things until later are being subdued. They are not taking dominion. They are resisting the challenges of the hard task and cultivating passivity. And so we must attack the hardest thing of the day first. Second, do your work now as opposed to later. Procrastination is just another way in your life in which you cultivate passivity. God has called you to rule and subdue the earth, and you are having trouble, you know, keeping your hair combed or keeping your clothes nice, right? David is telling Solomon, show yourself a man. Do what men do. Keep your domain in order, whether it's the home, garage, office, car. Right? They should bear the mark of your masculinity as you subdue it. Third, to young men, do you take dominion over your schoolwork, striving always to work to the best of your ability, even in subjects you don't like, or do you procrastinate and then have to rush to finish on time? Are you prepared every day for what you need for that day for class? Or as you're running out of the house to go to school, are you remembering something that was due? Do you take dominion over your room and keep it clean? We cannot be ruled by our environment. We must rule over it. Men, in your home, are you guarding your eyes and your heart in order to have a clean conscience before God? Have you put up barriers in place to guard your computer or those in your house? God has established men to be those who are responsible for their families, and so we must remember that we are responsible for them. Are you protecting their eyes and hearts and minds? Fifth, we read in 2 Samuel 23:20, then Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done mighty deeds, killed the two sons of Ariel of Moab. He also went down and killed a lion in the middle of a pit on a snowy day. Men, metaphorically, we must kill a lion. And this brings us back to that first point. We must do the hard thing. This act doesn't make you a man, but this is what biblical Christian men do. Maybe it is you need to finally share the gospel with that loved one. Whatever it is that you have to do, attack it. Let me close with this. This is from Mark Chansky's book, Manly Dominion. He says, quote, since the days of the Great Generation, Depression and World War II timeframe, Western culture has been bathed in the putrid, lukewarm waters of relativism, liberalism, feminism, and excusism. Bold convictions on issues have been demonized as bigoted. Bold actions by leaders have been maligned as macho. Bold endeavor by individuals have been suffocated by self-doubt. True biblical image-bearing manhood has gone into hiding. And then we read from Genesis 1, 27 and 28. God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And so we need to pray that the Spirit of God would bring revival of true manly dominion. Well, we'll come back and Kevin will join in on this conversation, but we're going to go to our third song, which is 10,000 Reasons by Matt Redman.
Bless the Lord, O my soul, O my soul. Worship his holy name. Sing like never before. Oh, my soul, I worship your holy name. The sun comes up, it's a new song again. Whatever may pass and whatever lies before me, let me be singing when the evening comes. Bless the your holy name. You're rich in love and you're slow to anger. Your name is great and your heart is kind. For all your goodness I will keep on singing.
strength is failing. The end draws near and my time has come. Still my soul will sing your praise unending. 10,000 years and then His holy name, sing like never before. Oh, my soul, I worship your holy name. Come, bless the Lord, oh, my soul. Oh, my soul, worship his holy name. Worship your holy name, Lord, I worship your holy name. Sing like never. Worship your holy name, Jesus, I will worship your holy name, worship your holy name.
That was Matt Redman with 10,000 Reasons. Michael, as we began to look at this very broad and very important topic today, you listed a series of identities, I guess, of man.
Right, it's like priority order of who we are.
Yeah, yeah. Can we tease out a little bit more on those? Because I think it's very important, because sometimes we start off as men and we identify ourselves as men, first of all.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a very good point. I think this priority order is very, I think it's biblical, and I think it's extremely helpful to keep in mind in all things. So first, you are a Christian. Second, husband. Third, father. And fourth is occupation. Now, that's assuming somebody's married and has kids. Right? If you're not married, don't have kids, and it goes from you're a Christian to your job. And there's more flexibility, I guess you can say, in that, because there's not as many in that priority. But, I mean, especially as Christian men, your identity, your primary identity is not in the fact that you are a man, but that you are united to Jesus himself. And that needs to be how we think of ourselves in terms of everything.
Mm-hmm.
We don't identify ourselves by our sin. We don't identify ourselves by primarily by what kind of car we drive or how much money we make. But as Christians, we identify ourselves as those who have been united to Jesus by faith. And I think that's so important, because when that identity and realization that God is first, that you're a Christian first, when that gets moved down the list, you are, in effect, taking whatever has been put in the top spot and making it God.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, that object, that person, will always let you down because they're not God. And that just causes chaos in so many areas. And that's why I think, you know, a lot of struggles within marriages could be because, you know, the husband has put that fourth spot of work before their kids or before their wife, or putting a wife may put her kids before her husband. And that's what causes so much tension and frustration and arguments, is because that order has been rearranged.
Yeah, and I think that in our society, there is too much commendation given to people who destroy parts of their lives for the sake of success in terms of
But I think that is so true. But it's because we have set up success and money and fame as the ideal to which we all need to be pursuing.
Yeah.
And that's just not the biblical picture.
Yeah, and I think that once we have the priority right, then we can get the balance right. And if we have a good balance in all of those areas, not neglecting anything, but always having the things in the correct priority, then we have the ability to function properly. Anything else is actually dysfunctional.
Absolutely.
It's not how we were created to be.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we are created first to be those who glorify God, who worship Him. And within the confines of marriage that God established in creation in Genesis, it's to have children, to parent those children, to follow after Jesus. And even in Genesis, in the garden, God gives them jobs. He gives them work. They're to cultivate the garden, right? They're to be workers in the garden. And so work is a good thing. Sometimes we don't want to work. We think it's a bad thing. It's a drudgery. But we need to, and sometimes it is because of our own sin. We're not looking at it properly. But work is a good thing given to us by God. And so that is part of that priority order.
Yeah, but so often a person is identified by their job first and foremost. And I think that's somewhere where we can as Christians fall down as well. Because even the Christian leaders and the pastors can put the church before the before their family.
Absolutely.
And before their wife.
Absolutely.
And that can be a very dangerous situation.
Oh, yeah. I remember talking to Tom Askell, who's the editor of that book, Dear Timothy, and he told me of a gentleman that he knew who did that very thing, that he was so focused on the church and on his ministry, which, you know, looks good. You know, you're putting your efforts into something that is expanding the gospel, to proclaim the gospel. But at the same time, he was neglecting his wife and his marriage was falling apart. And Tom Askell's advice to him was, you need to take a break, you need to take a vacation and go spend time with your wife and fix it. Because to do that actually dishonors the gospel, because you're neglecting the wife that God gave you.
Our society has emasculated men to a very large extent, Michael, that we, you can either be a macho guy who obviously, if he's overly macho, means that he's hiding some insecurities, and that can be a big problem. Or you end up being a timid guy who doesn't know where to fit in society. And both of those are wrong.
Yeah.
And both of those are not what we are created to be as men. But the society around us seems to have taken a lot of what would have been considered the role of man and, you know, kind of diluted it a lot. And made it, you know, difficult for men to know exactly what they're supposed to do and who they are supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, we could spend probably a whole show just talking about the historical background as to why that is and, you know, where that came from. But you're right. We need to avoid the extremism of just totally embracing passivity, where men aren't doing anything.
Yeah.
And the other extreme, which is, well, a true man is this macho, muscular, big guy, you know, who's just, nobody gets in his way. He's knocking people out of the way right and left, because we don't see that picture.
No.
And where do we want to go to see what a real biblical man looks like? We go to Jesus.
Exactly.
We go to him. And what do we see? We see him flipping over tables in the temple. Yeah, we see him calling people the Pharisees, you children of snakes.
Yes.
But at the same time, we see that he has compassion on people. Mm-hmm. He's talking to a Samaritan woman. He's healing people who are sick. He's touching people with leprosy. And so there's this balance between there's a balance between love and caring, and at the same time of justice and appropriate anger at the right times, not in the sense, well, now you're angry and you're mad, but that you're leading the way because injustice is done.
And of course, the biggest example he was is as a servant leadership who's willing to lay down his life for his friends and his people. Yeah.
And that's the key word, is servant leadership.
Yeah.
He was a servant leader. And as I mentioned on Sunday, he was on his hands and knees washing the feet of the disciples.
Mm-hmm.
And he, as you said, just, you know, he was a leader, but he gives up his life for those he loves.
Yeah. And that's so important, isn't it? So to get that priority right, we must first of all come to Jesus as we are and confessing our sin, put our trust in his death on the cross of Calvary as the means by which you may enter into heaven. Mm-hmm. And having had that priority switch changed in your life, whereby you're now a Christian, then a husband or father, and then whatever job you do, then that priority will be reset, and therefore you'll be able to live a much more fulfilled and happy life in this world, and then go to be with God for all eternity. But unfortunately, Michael, we've come to the end of another show here on Heart of the Matter on Dundalk FM.
It's a very fast flying hour.
It sure is, isn't it? So coming up next, we have Shades of Green with Jimmy Neary, and later on we have the repeat of Town Talk from this morning. But we close with a song called Mercy Me. And this is actually, in Ireland, Michael has chosen Bring the Rain. I don't know. Anyway, this is called Bring the Rain by Mercy Me. So we look forward to speaking to you live again in a couple of weeks' time.
I can count a million times people asking me how I can praise you with all that I've gone through. The question just amazes me, can circumstances possibly change who I forever